Yo, if that is not a way to start out a Thursday, I don't know what is. Today, we have a lot of fun things to talk about. Big announcements on speakers. Also, retail CEO replacement is hitting hard in the retail industry. And remember, we're retailers. Everywhere I go, the people we're retailers.
You took that one, like, threw it out there and then just took a big old grappling hook and ripped it. Just pull corded it just like that. Everyone was like, retail CEOs.
Yeah, let's get rid of them.
We're retailers.
Oh, yeah. That thing. Welcome to Thursday.
That was intense. I don't think they were ready for that, Paul.
I'm feeling extra spicy today because I had a full 8 hours of sleep last night, which more than totals the sleep I've had in the previous 2 days. So I feel amazing today. I'm living a good life this morning. The kids all slept. The baby slept. Like, we're good. How you doing?
Amazing.
Oh, nice. Man.
Yo, we got a couple, like, we're going to go quick on the announcements today. On the you know, we do a little, like, you know, we both grew up in church. So we got to do our youth pastor every once in a while, right?
Welcome, everybody.
Welcome, everybody, to this show. Today we've got, right?
Yeah.
So, we're really excited. SoDuCon tickets are going quick. We want to make sure that if you are a part of our community, you snag your tickets. Now, a few people have been asking us. They're like, so we see the website, and we know that it's got a place, and we know that there's a timeline, a basic timeline, but what's actually going to happen?
Who's actually going to be there, right?
Without a doubt. We're starting to drop that stuff fast and furious. So as the day goes on today, like, you could probably check asoducon.com 8 times and see different stuff every single time. So we're announcing speakers and collaborators and sessions and topics and timelines and all that stuff over the next 48 hours is just going to get blown up on the website. So pay attention, watch what we've got going on. Paul, tell them about a couple of the people that we've got coming.
Oh, my gosh. So these are the people, if you go to asoducon.com right now, you're going to see some OGs and some new faces. But right now on the site, we told you earlier in the week, Jim McKelvey, we're so excited to be our featured speaker, New York Times bestselling author of The Innovation Sack and co-founder of a little company that's been a little successful called Square. Right, the little payment thing. He founded that company with Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, former CEO of Twitter. And it's now called Block. He's going to be there. We're going to have Claude Silver, Chief Heart Officer of VaynerX. She is going to be amazing. Darren Doan, epic music video producer and brand builder. He's got over 1 billion, with a B, views on his music videos. Who else is on the screen right now? I don't even know. I don't have it up in front of me.
You got Brian Benstock, and you better believe he's going to come with fire.
Mixing a little Benstock in with those other people we just mentioned is going to be insanely cool. It's going to be like a chemical reaction.
Really, really cool. Dr. Nicole Lipkin, we're really excited about her coming because she's going to set the tone with how to approach some of the thoughts and processes and ideas that you might come across during the conference. So that's going to be a really cool like opening session.
It's cool.
To dive into.
She was actually the very first speaker we had on the very first Asodu
that's
live
so
stream.
Great.
Because, like,
yeah. Which is perfect because I think, you know, she is, she really understands, like, the psychology of being in business, being even just a person, right? And approaching business with a psychology mindset. And so when you think about just introducing any level of topics in whatever market, whatever's happening in the world, like, approaching both with a level mindset and understanding what you're heading into is really important. So I think back early pandemic, super timely, right? Launching a new conference with a whole different way to approach the topic of retail, really timely.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
That's going to be so one. I'm going to be like popcorn at the front row on that one,
I think. The coolest thing is going to be the conversations that happen around these things. And I know we're bringing a lot from outside automotive in, but don't get us wrong. We have a whole list of who's who in retail auto from OEM level all the way through store operators. And I'm excited because I think this is the event where everyone might just snap their heads sideways and be like, oh, these boys are serious about this.
They weren't kidding.
So we're excited to release those things today. If you're not on, if you're not following us on LinkedIn, Asoducon or Asotu, A-S-O-T-U, on LinkedIn. We're going to be releasing a lot of like speaker announcements and all types of things. On Instagram, we have Asotu, Automotive State of the Union. We also have an Instagram account just for the event, which is at AsotuCon. So we don't have a lot of content up there yet, but if you're going, you want to be on that Instagram account, or if you really wish you could go and you just want to follow tight along to what's going on, follow AsotuCon on Instagram. One more announcement and getting into the news. Tomorrow we have our always anticipated Friday All Things Used Car Room with David Long, and we got Steve Greenfield on the show, which is we're going to be talking about the future of automotive retail. Is that something to talk about these days? I know it's kind of a generic topic, right? You hear it around, but don't be fooled. We're going to have 150 dealers and operators in the room that are going to really be talking about legitimate, what is going on now? How can you change in your stores? What are the best dealers doing now? And Steve Greenfield is going to give us a peek over the horizon, I have a feeling.
Yeah, and he never misses. I'm telling you what, if you saw him on the podcast with us, what was it, last week or early this week? That, you know, he just, last week, he's just dialed in and level-headed. So excited about that conversation and that pinging around the room.
All right, let's talk about some news. Wall Street Journal, exclusive article this morning, top retail CEOs are being replaced as the retail landscape is shifting. So let's give you, the premise is this: as the situation in retail is changing, a new type of CEO needs to be at the helm. So little companies you may have heard of like Gap, Bed Bath & Beyond, Dollar General, Under Armour, Home Depot are replacing CEOs amidst that changing landscape. You know, some of those companies postponed replacing CEOs during the pandemic, right? It makes sense, right? Things are going crazy. We don't need any more change. Yep. But all this is kind of coming to pass now. So I'm going to give you a quote from the article. The landscape of retailing changed during the COVID era, said Craig Johnson, the president of consulting firm Consumer Growth Partners. The skills necessary to succeed today are much broader. So a little bit.
All right. Tell us about the broad skills, though, because that's the question on everyone's mind. What are these broad skills that maybe someone in the past didn't need?
OK, so in the past, to be a retailer, like CEOs needed good instincts to merchandise, right? A great merchant made a great CEO of a retail company. And sometimes another skill set would be just someone that understood trends and fashion and style and like what people are really attracted to. And that was enough to make you a great CEO of a retail company. But now, as we know in the automotive industry, because we are retailers, is that data, technology, sustainability, right? All of these things have become a core part of operating a good retail business, right? Supply constraints, understanding manufacturing. These are all things that are changing. So it makes a lot of sense that the leader necessary to lead these companies are changing, right? And tying this back.
You know what's interesting?
Go ahead.
When I start to hear that, and maybe we aren't seeing that particularly in the auto industry and like GMs and CEOs and things like that, because there's still that grit that you kind of need. But where I saw this happening already in auto, especially over the last like 7 to 8 years, you know, it really probably started in the late 2000s or early 2010s. But really in the last 7 to 8 years is this shift in the used car manager, right?
Yeah.
Typically the used car manager was the guy or gal that had been in auto the longest, right? Knew all the cars backwards and forwards, carried the black book in their back pocket, the only one that
could look down the body panel and be like, oh, this car looks really great. It just got a good stance to it. Yeah.
But it's interesting because now a lot of used car managers are actually not even, they're not writing deals or anything like that. They are almost, they're leaning data scientist, right? I think of just even the people that are appraising vehicles, right? Is
different
people
game.
That understand market dynamics, understand inventory levels and what inventory works best, you know, sale rates and market day supply and all that type of stuff. And you know, at least the stores that I came from, like they went out with OBD2 scanners and paint depth meters and all of that type of stuff. And then the technology, like, I mean, I know that, you know, technologies like VinQ and AccuTrade are serving up all of this historical data in that appraisal screen to give you a real clear picture of like what might need to be done in service or what has been done in service or all that type of stuff. So that is a whole different role than like, that one will look good on the front line, boss.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
Put 25.8 on it and we'll see if it goes, you know? Why is there a weird cigar?
I don't know. Because it's old school car business, right? That works. I mean, look, we saw an instance this week of a 19-year-old with four curved monitors in front of him by 156 vehicles at 19 from behind a computer screen.
Not from the auction.
Nope.
But like some from the auction, but primarily from customers and local, local purchases and stuff like that. But literally, I mean, we're talking like when we say curved monitors, we're saying these things are like 30-inch monitors.
They're like the monitors
equals a 52-inch. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's like the monitor that most people buy to replace two monitors on their desk. There are four of those. It was awesome.
Yeah, four.
All right, we digress. But the bottom line is this, is that the skill sets needed, and many of you in this community know this already, the skill sets needed to be a leader, to be a CEO, a GM, a sales manager today is a different skill set than that was needed 10 years ago and will be a different skill set very much like in 3 years from now, in five years from now. So if we're not moving forward, right? If we're not learning, we're not growing or expanding, right? We're going to fall behind because retail is a great indicator. Automotive should be paying attention to broader retail, which is why we include these stories, because they give us indicators of what we should be paying attention to. Like there are peacetime generals and there are wartime generals. And in the auto industry, like we need those wartime generals. And speaking of wartime generals.
Stop. Segway time.
You know, his demeanor may not communicate this if you just had a conversation with him, but Warren Buffett understands what it is to lead in times of uncertainty. In fact, I think he always comes out ahead when there are times of uncertainty. And Berkshire Hathaway, his company, is betting big on oil. They've been ramping up their position in Occidental Petroleum Corporation since February, and now they are up to almost 20% ownership in the company. Occidental, they do oil exploration and drilling. And once they own 20% of the company, they can actually start reporting earnings on their P&L. So there's like a little bit of a dual reason for this. One is so that now they can, partake in the good earnings of the oil company. But, the confidence in the future of oil from Warren Buffett, the wartime general, who's historically very right on just about everything. He's saying, oh no, this is a really big, important part of our future in the midst of all this EV talk. He says, quote, the great Mr. Buffett. He says, we should be very happy that we can produce 11 million barrels a day or something of the sort in the United States, rather than be able to produce none and having to find 11 million barrels a day still somewhere else in the world to take care of keeping the American industrial machine working.
This is so key, because when you think, like, everybody's talking EV future and we're talking about vehicles. And I mean, I was reading another article where Polestar has already met their sales record meeting their sales for last year, right? The current year. We're talking about, I think it was like 25,000 vehicles sold, right? Nobody's like taking over gas with this EV future. Now all the manufacturers are going there, but that's honestly like this much segment of how much you think of
millions planes, and millions and
trains
millions and millions,
industrial
farming, all
like that stuff isn't going electric, right? So yeah, I think it's unbelievable. There's so much more out there that still uses oil as an energy source. I mean, even like Texas basically saying we don't have enough wind to get the turbines going so that we have natural power electricity
to turn an air conditioner on.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Look, EV batteries, very sexy these days, but let's face it, oil does the work, right? Oil's still doing the work. All right, where are we going to go? Hey, like,
speaking of doing the work.
Stop. Segway.
Time.
The dollar has just been fighting for 20 years, just trying. Just the dollar, like the American dollar has been putting in the that's not good.
I was wondering where you were going with that, but it was a fair try. Like you really led with enthusiasm, so I think we got that far. but the euro has fallen below the US dollar for the first time in 20 years and almost the first time ever. There was a little initial blip in the beginning where it wasn't, or we could say for the first time period. But I remember when the euro came out and it was like 2 euros to every $1. And so
Right.
The euro now ranked, I think, yesterday at 0.98 cents on the dollar. So growing concerns about energy independence amidst the Russian aggression and all that stuff that's going on have actually created a lot of tension, and the euro has been dropping. Also, the European Central Bank has not acted to raise interest rates to curb, you know, inflation and uncertainty. Therefore, that currency is dropping value in the global sense, especially when it comes to things benchmarked on the U.S. dollar, like oil, right? So oil is benchmarked on the, there's your segue, benchmarked on the U.S. dollar. So meaning anything that is imported, including oil, or benchmarked on the dollar is getting much more expensive. And I had to put this in here because it just made me feel a little bit better about the price I just paid for gas yesterday morning.
Yep.
So in Europe, you can pay, here's the range, $7.35 a gallon in Germany. Now in Europe, they charge by liter, but we did the math. $7.65 right. per gallon in Germany to $11.35 a gallon in Hong Kong. Norway was right under Hong Kong and a few things. So, you know, I didn't feel too bad. It took a little bit of the sting out of $4.35, right? I mean, European right. gas is yeah. always more expensive, dude, but still.
I'm not going to lie. This might make you mad. I got gas for $3.89 this week. I know. I don't know how that happened. It was magical. $3.89 well, a gallon.
How did that happen? Because you're in Tennessee.
I don't know. There's two spots near me that are both like $3.89 and $3.93 or something dude, like that. Most great. Everything else is in that $4.30s, $4.40s range.
That's
but cool. I was like, I felt victorious, right? I'm like jumping around my car like, I did it!
It's amazing how the perspective shifts, right? $3.83 would have been like mind-blowing. But right. I think this is really something that we can look at. Like you look at what our Fed is doing with interest rates, how they're trying to curb inflation, all the uncertainty, and just broadening out the perspective a little bit and realizing like, okay, there are things at play that are shifting, that are moving. And it is kind of a volatile market, but to realize, you know, the rest of the world's dealing with it too.
And my perspective is up though, because we reported just a few weeks ago that the average price in the U.S. was had climbed over $5.
Yep.
We're down almost 40 cents.
Yeah.
I mean, right oil direction. Oil has a really, really close relationship with our overall economy. So, yeah. My perspective is really strong right now on the
feeling
US
good
economy.
This morning.
I'm not going to lie.
Wait till tomorrow. I don't
feeling
know.
Feeling good.
Until you read the news tomorrow. I don't know. Like these days. Right. We also included one little bonus story today because yesterday we talked about you know, a story we had been like behind on about BMW announcing their subscription-based heated seats. And saw an article this morning, wanted to share it. But just so you know, the articles we reference are always in the show notes. So you can go back and link to them, especially on the podcast. If you're listening to the podcast on, you know, any platform, right. you can hyperlink through the articles. And this one, you really should, because I thought it was a great article written on The Verge, which is definitely a retail-facing mentality. So I like to read it. But so Cox Automotive conducted a study of 217 people who intend to buy a new car. And they said, hey, who would be into subscription-based services and features? And only 25% said they'd be willing to pay a monthly annual fee. And the remaining 75% said, in The Verge's voice, not ours. But
yeah, this is the Verge's vernacular. This was not the checkbox in the Cox Automotive survey.
Yeah, no, Cox didn't say this. But the other 75% said, piss off! Basically, that's how I hear
that
Merle,
in that voice.
It's got to have a British accent. You piss off, right? So automakers are sure that consumers will get used to this, but guy named Sam, not going to pronounce his last name on the show, principal analyst at Guidehouse Insight said, automakers are sure that customers will get used to it, but he is skeptical it will fly. And he also said, look, unless automakers lower the purchase price of new vehicles to offset subscriptions, customers aren't likely to afford the nickel and diming. So I like that way of putting it, nickel and diming. We talk about affordability nonstop, right, over the last 6 months. And then unless that purchase price is going down, which I don't see that happening, right?
Definitely
like
not.
I think automakers are like, the subscription things will be plus, right?
Without a doubt.
And so it sounds like a great thing to say as a CEO to your shareholders and say, we're going to get $2 billion in subscription services. All that stuff sounds awesome. People like that are investing in your company, you got to clap. But I don't think the retail public is going to be quite as happy.
Well, I think the problem that we're seeing, especially with the heated seat thing with BMW, is they're talking about right now they're selling on hard elements, right?
Yeah.
Not soft elements, right? And what most people do when they're purchasing on a subscription is soft elements of their experience, yeah. right? Whether that be, you know, the Grubhub subscription or the Netflix subscription, mm-hmm. it's not hard usability.
Right.
And does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense.
Transitioning that frame of mind in your subscription service, you don't typically go to,
I'm trying to think of somewhere else where you do that, where there's like a feature that you know is like half a centimeter under your seat. Like the heating elements are there. Like you have buttons here and it's not working, right? It's like a real frustrating, yep. it just gives me a feeling of frustration just knowing right. I can't do it. Like I got yeah. upset. I've been preaching about this. Like I have a Kia Telluride and I'm so upset when I realized like after the 1 year, like I had to pay to get the auto start to work. And I was also exactly. upset that it just wasn't on the fob.
But something like Tesla's doing, which is upgrading horsepower.
Yeah.
That's a soft element that is an elevated luxury from what you would typically expect.
Oh.
And so I think that a lot of automakers have to figure that matrix out.
Yeah, sure. There's no doubt. It's unnatural to a retail consumer. It's just yep. unnatural. So yep. there's that hurdle too. Well, thanks for hanging with us today. Obviously, we have a lot of work to do. We're going in to build the SotaCon website, find more news sources, bring more stuff to you, broaden your perspective, all in a day's work. Go out there. It's Thursday. We got some runway to go. Go take off.